The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third and final webinar on the Labors of Hercules, which are part of our Great Quest webinar series. As I mentioned in the first Labor of Hercules webinar, I hope that this information gives you greater insight into the astrological signs, and that you're able to relate to the tests that Hercules is going through with the person that you're doing your esoteric profile on for your dark half of the year paper that you should be working on. It also gives you really good insight as to your own astrological influences. Okay, as we've talked about before, DK describes for us the study of the labors of Hercules by telling us that the progress of a world disciple is illustrated in the heavens through the zodiacal signs. It's as though God had pictured in space his plan for the working out of the evolution of the human spirit back to its source. So this is why we study Hercules. We've studied the first four signs, and we know that, or the preparatory signs, and then the four signs of the physical plane struggle in the middle there, and now we're at the final four signs of achievement. The aspirant has pretty much worked out all the issues of glamour and the form, and they're now free from those limitations. So in the final four, we can go straight to that goal in Sagittarius. We can scale the mountain of initiation in Capricorn, become a world worker in Aquarius, and a world savior in Pisces. So the disciple can now demonstrate the powers that he has developed over all of these years. We're going to talk first about the Sagittarius labor, killing the Stymphalian birds. As usual, Hercules begins his journey with a visit to his teacher to get the instructions. Within the place of peace, the teacher stood and spoke to Hercules. O son of God, who art also a son of man, the teacher said, the time has come to tread the other way. At gate the ninth you stand, pass through and find the marsh of Stymphalus, where dwell the birds that wreak havoc. Discover then the way to flush them from their long secured abode. The teacher paused a moment before going on and then continued. The flame that gleams beyond the mind reveals direction sure. The task awaits. Through the gate nine, now you must go. And so Hercules embarked on this ninth labor. He searched for a long time until he came to the fetid marsh of Stymphalus, where the throng of birds cawed menacingly. The noise was abhorrent to everyone, and it was dissonant. As he got closer, he saw that these large birds were fierce and hideous, with iron beaks and talons that were sharpened like swords. Their feathers, too, seemed like steel shafts that would inflict wounds just by falling from the bird. Three birds saw Hercules, and they swooped down on him. He stood his ground and warded off attacks with the heavy club that he always bore. One bird he struck resoundingly on the back. Two feathers plummeted to the ground, quivering as they plunged into the ground like knives. He fought the birds for a while before they finally withdrew. He tried many different ways to kill the birds, but he was always unsuccessful. He tried his arrows, but he only killed a small number, barely impeding the huge flock that rose in the clouds so thick that they hid the sun. He considered other means to get rid of them before he finally remembered the words of his teacher. The flame that gleams beyond the mind reveals direction sure. And that's when he got a new idea. He had two large cymbals, and he used them to create this unearthly screeching sound. The sound was so piercing and harsh that it would scare the dead. Hercules, the sound was so intolerable that he had to cover his ears. At twilight, when the marsh was dense with countless birds, Hercules returned and clashed his cymbals loudly over and over again. He could barely tolerate it, but it created such a noise that it managed to bewilder and disturb the birds. They rose up, flapping their wings wildly, and screeched in hoarse dismay. Utterly confused, the vast cloud of birds fled in haste, never to return. Silence spread across the march. The horrid birds had disappeared. When he returned, the teacher greeted him. The birds of slaughter have been driven off. The labor is achieved. So we always look at the meaning of the myth. And Hercules freed himself from illusion. And Athena had given him the symbols that he used to clash loudly and scare the birds off. Symbolically, we must get the birds out of the marshes and clear the air where we can see them and conquer them. There were three birds that did the most harm, and in one book they're referred to as cruel gossip, talk of the self, and casting of pearls before swine. That's a quaint old phrase that means talking about occult matters to people who are not yet ready to understand what you mean. Hercules had already dealt with those horrendous tests of the disciple in Scorpio, demonstrating to himself that he could no longer be taken in by the serpent of illusion. He thought he was free from fear and glamour, from all that could beguile him, and the vision of Sagittarius could now be seen. But he discovered he still had an emotional nature, refined as it might be, and that it must still be controlled. He discovered that he can be a devastating force, that by his words and thought he could do real harm. Remember this lesson. The further on we go along the path, the more we function as a spiritual entity, and the more potent we become, and so the more harm we can do. Disciples, they're forceful, wield a lot of power, usually at the center of some group. If you're an aspirant or a disciple, the thought and speech activity is your main enterprise. You must weigh your thoughts carefully because there is the potency at the back of those thoughts. And when you think wrongly, the harm that you do is more potent than the harm that a less evolved person is going to wield. In Sagittarius, Hercules took up and completed the work started in both Scorpio and Taurus. This is all part of that fourth ray of harmony through conflict working out as it manifests through these three signs. Sagittarius has sometimes been called the sign of the effect of Scorpio. It's the very next sign after Scorpio. The moment we freed ourselves from illusion, the moment we enter into Sagittarius and we see that goal. We have never really seen it before because between us and the goal, there was always that cloud of thought forms that prevented us from seeing it. We talk about spiritual love, devotion to the Christ, devotion to the elder brothers of the race or to the soul. And we are occupied with these thoughts, and so we build these clouds of thought forms around them because we are thinking. And as we think, we build. We've built this huge cloud of thought forms strictly about our aspirations, and so we don't actually see the real goal. Sagittarius is the archer on that white horse, sometimes pictured as the centaur with the bow and arrows. In these two modes of picturing, the centaur half human and half animal, and the archer on the white horse half human and half divine, you have the whole story of Sagittarius. A white horse is always the symbol of divinity. It is a double sign, and whenever you have a double sign, you have a problem. Gemini is the polar opposite of Sagittarius. Gemini, duality, Sagittarius, unity, the one-pointed going forward, the unified personality, conscious of the soul, determined to enter the sign Capricorn, where the great transition is made out of the fourth human kingdom into the fifth, or the spiritual kingdom. He took up and completed the work started in Aries. Both of them are fire signs, so there's many correlations. In Aries, he dealt with thought at its source. In Sagittarius, he demonstrates complete control of thought and speech. In Aries, Hercules began on the plane of mind in his endeavor to capture those man-eating mares, and he met with failure because he worked from the standpoint of the personality. He didn't work from the standpoint of the soul. In Sagittarius, he slaughtered, or drove off, depending on the different versions of the story, the man-eating birds. He was back again to the same problem of the plane of mind. This is one of the first things an aspirant to initiation has to learn to do, to demonstrate complete control of thoughts and words. There is no initiation in Capricorn for us until we can do this. Silence is required. Sagittarius is called in some ancient books the sign of silence. In ancient mysteries, the newly admitted brother had to sit in silence. He was not allowed to speak. He had to work and watch, because one cannot enter the fifth kingdom in nature, the spiritual kingdom, or climb the mountain of Capricorn until there has been restraint of speech and control of thought. That is the lesson of Sagittarius. Restraint of speech, control of thought. After you've given up using the ordinary forms of speech, such as gossip, then you have to learn restraint of speech about things spiritual. You have to learn what not to say about the life of the soul to people who are not yet ready to hear it. The right use of thought, restraint of speech, and consequent harmlessness on the physical plane result in liberation, because we are all held to the physical plane by what we ourselves have said and done. The moment we no longer set up wrong relations with people by the things we say that we should not have said is the moment we stop thinking about things, about people that we should not think. Little by little, all of that stuff holds us to the planetary existence. And once we learn to not think those wrong thoughts, to not say those wrong things, and to be harmless, then we're severed from that planetary existence, and we're free to climb the mountain like the goat in Capricorn. One question here might be why we even tie ourselves to other human beings. Why keep on seeing the goal and reincarnating? The answer is that we do it for service, for love of our fellow brothers, and yet we do this in a detached, dispassionate way, without critical thought, selfish or self-pitying thought, and especially without gossip. Sagittarius is the spirit of truth. It is the sum of all truth growing out of individual revelation. Now, the usual reaction to getting a special revelation is that we begin to think that we're somehow special, which is itself a separative thought and a misuse of Sagittarius. We try and impose our personal interpretation of the truth on our friends and our neighbors. This is only one small portion of the truth. Remember, we're all at different stages of the path. So what is truth and revelation for one is not so for someone at a different stage. Sagittarius, the first of the great universal signs, is truth as the whole only when arrows of thought are rightly used. All the various truths form one whole truth, and that is what is finally realized in Sagittarius. But you cannot go through the gate at the foot of the mountain until you have seen where your little bit of truth forms part of that greater group mosaic. Sagittarius has also been called the sign of the spirit of right, growing out of the contentions of the previous eight signs. At this point, we have learned to discriminate through our long travels, between right and wrong. We should know what is right for ourselves, but also have learned that is what for what is right for us personally may not be totally wrong for someone else, and vice versa. We all have different equipment, different heredity, different tradition, different background, different racial tendencies, even if we're on the same stage of the path. We are all very diverse. We each have our own ray makeup with the different solar personality rays. So we learn to do what is right by us, but to also give credit to other people to know what is right for them, not imposing our rightness on anyone else. This is a Sagittarian way of the soul. Harmlessness, control of thought, and restraint of speech. Some astrology books tell us there are three signs of benefit that outpour from the zodiac. They're the three fire signs of Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. The gift of existence in Aries is the wonder of being a human being. If you can think of the difference between a mineral and a human being, you can see the wonder of being human. But we all started out eons ago in the mineral kingdom, and we worked our way steadily up. In Leo, the gift of opportunity was bestowed. We individualized. We were able to use life for ourselves. At first, it was the selfish little Leo personality, growing into a more soul-conscious Leo, providing an opportunity to open the gates for others. In Sagittarius, the gift of power is bestowed. One definition of an occultist is a human being who works in the world of powers and forces. But to safely wield power, restraint of speech and thought has to be learned. When we love enough, we may have power. When we love enough and are harmless enough as well, then the gates of heaven and hell will be put into our hands, but not before. And so, here is the summary of Sagittarius. Represented by the archer. It's a fire sign. Quality is focused direction. It's one-pointed activity. In the early stages, it was satisfaction of desire. In the later stages, aspiration for the goal of initiation. negative traits, careless, tactless, superficial, inconsistent, overconfident. Positive traits, optimism, intelligence, philosophical outlook, generosity, and an adventurous spirit. The esoteric concepts, illumination of the spirit of truths, truth of the whole rather than just a small part, refocusing and reorienting the personality to that higher goal. Polar opposite, Gemini, an air sign. Rulers, the exoteric ruler is Jupiter, the esoteric, the Earth. Keywords from the angle of form, let food be sought. From the angle of the soul, I reach that goal and then I see another. And now we move on to Capricorn, and the labor in Capricorn is to slay Cerberus, the three-headed dog who guards hell. So here we are again, facing the presiding one. When Hercules stood face to face with his teacher, he was told that he'd faced dangers and achieved much, that wisdom and strength were his. Now he could make use of them to rescue someone who was in agony. The teacher gently touched the forehead of Hercules, and a vision rose. A man lay prone upon a rock and groaned. Massive chains bound him. The vulture pecked at his liver. The man uplifted his manacled hands and cried out for help, but his words echoed vainly in the desolation. The vision faded. The shackled one whom you have seen is called Prometheus, the teacher said. For ages he has suffered, and yet he cannot die because he's immortal. From heaven he stole the fire. For this he has been punished. The place of his abode is known as hell, the domain of Hades. Unto Prometheus, O Hercules, you were asked to be a savior. And so Hercules proceeded on his way. Now remember, we've already seen Prometheus in one prior myth, haven't we? Hercules stopped and rescued him in the Gemini labor, right? This just shows the many subtle ways that the stories vary from book to book and even within the same book. It doesn't invalidate the lesson just because there's conflicts in the story. We learn something from all of them. There were three things that Hercules had to do before he could start down into the depths of hell. First, he had to purify himself. Now, remember, he's the son of God, and he's triumphed. He's been transfigured. Yet, he was still told to purify himself, and he thought he was already so pure. But, hey, apparently not. So how he underwent this process of purification, we're not told. But he needed to demonstrate things that he was free from irritability and selfishness. If he was imprisoned in any way, even by the mind, then he wasn't going to be able to make it through hell. If there's any selfish emotions, that means we're not pure. So he had to purify himself of these kind of lingering things. Then we read that he had to be initiated into the mysteries. The author of this particular labor, Francis Merchant, he hypothesized that what that meant was that you go through your own personal hell before you can go down through universal hell. You have a terrible time in your own life, and you're initiated as you undergo your own hell. You learn the nature of the universe by individual experience. You cannot learn anything by hearsay. As has happened before in the myths, Hercules then had to pause and perform an act of service before he could advance upon Cerberus. He saw two people who were bound and being attacked by cattle. He had to deliver them before he could meet his own problem, because service always comes first for any initiate. Finally, Hercules enters hell, and he eventually found Hades. Hades demanded to know what Hercules was doing there, and Hercules told him, "I seek to free Prometheus. The path is guarded by the monster Cerberus with three heads. If you can conquer him with your bare hands, a feat no one has yet performed, you may unbind the suffering Prometheus," Hercules was told. It didn't take him long to find the triple-headed snarling dog, who sprang up on him. Grasping the primary throat of Cerberus, Hercules held it in his vice-like grip. The monster thrashed about, and after a time, Hercules had mastered it. Hercules then went on, found Prometheus on the stone slab, and he broke the chains and set him free. Retracing his steps once again, he reached the world of living things, and he found the teacher there. "The light now shines within the world of dark," the teacher told him. "The labor is achieved. Rest now, my son." So there are two gates of dominant importance. Cancer, the gate into what we erroneously call life or incarnation, and Capricorn, the gate out of incarnation and into initiation in the spiritual kingdom. What we see in this myth are two different areas of emphasis. First emphasis is on the descent into hell to free humanity in the figure of the tortured Prometheus. This is similar to when Jesus descended into hell, because his all-inclusive love covered all the lost souls who had found their way there. The other issue deals more with Cerberus, and in some versions of the myth, Hercules slayed him, and in other versions, he brought him to earth. We're told that it's on his knees the Capricornian offers heart and life to the soul, and only then, when self-initiated, can he be trusted with the secrets of life and the higher powers. So the symbol of Cerberus, the three-headed dog with a terrifying bark, snakes growing all over his body, he was the guardian of hell. The three heads symbolize sensation, desire, and good intentions. It is love of sensation that drives humanity to satisfy hunger in the economic world or to satisfy desire for happiness in the worlds of pleasure. The violent impacts of sensation are sought to keep the mind occupied. The central head was grasped by Hercules first because it was the most important, since desire underlies all sensation. The third head, surprisingly, is good intentions, but they're good intentions that are not carried out. So you have desire in the center on the one side, you have sensation typifying all impacts, and on the other side, the third head is good intentions that were not thought through, that were never performed. That reminds me of that old saying that hell is paved with good intentions. Well, according to this labor, it sure is. The tail made of serpents for Cerberus typifies all illusion that impede the progress of any spiritual life, the materiality that holds us down, the lower psychic nature that causes such destruction and fear along every possible line, the fear of failure, which holds so many back from activity, and breeds inertia. This is a great fault, we're told, of aspirants and disciples. Hercules had to defeat Cerberus because all sun gods are occupied with the problem of humanity and because they must go down into hell alone to save humanity. And so all sun gods are born in the sign of Capricorn. When's Jesus' birthday? 25th of December. What's that sign? Capricorn. This sign symbolizes the third initiation, which is really the first major initiation. In Matthew 17, we read that Christ took three disciples, Peter, James, and John, up to the high mountain, and he was transfigured before them. Peter means a rock or a foundation, is the symbol of the physical body. James, the deceiver, symbolizes the emotional nature, the source of all glamour. And John symbolizes the mind, the name meaning the Lord has spoken. And so there you have the symbolism of the three aspects of the personality in Capricorn at the Transfiguration. This is a sign of the goat. It is a superhuman sign, a universal and impersonal sign. All the previous labors of Hercules have been concerned with his own liberation. Now he faces three signs that have no relation to his personal achievements. He is free. He is an initiate and a world disciple. He works as a superhuman in a human body. The great stages of development upon the path of expansion, which we call initiation, are recorded in the brain. They can't be told to you by someone else. The hallmark of the initiate is silence. Capricorn is considered a sad sign. It is a sign of intense suffering and loneliness, for those are also marks of an initiate. Impersonality is based upon a fundamental personality achievement. You must have been tremendously attached before you can know the meaning of impersonality. We can love all mankind without sentimentality because we know the meaning of personal love. And we must give the same love to everybody that we have ever given to those that we held close. This isn't shuttering yourself off or putting up walls. It is loving everyone because we are able to see the people as they truly are, faults and all. Remember in the rules of the road we studied, and we're told each sees and knows the villainy of each. And yet there is, with that great revelation, no turning back, no spurning of each other. That is the goal in Capricorn. The world disciple does not only do what Hercules did, go down into hell to conquer Cerberus, but he works among men all the time. He's interested, truly, in his fellow man. Now, a word of warning for any of you who are born in the sign of Cancer, please don't get the idea that you are an initiate. We want to lay emphasis here on a sense of proportion and the status of evolution. There's a very long process of evolution to follow before we finally reach that stage. Aspirants either suffer from an inferiority complex that makes them feel it's not possible for them to do anything, or they have an exaggerated idea of their importance. They have a little bit of soul consciousness, but only a tiny touch, and they think that's the whole thing, and they become inflated. This shows no sense of proportion. It is in soul consciousness that we eventually function in Capricorn, and we know ourselves to be initiates and can enter upon the two great universal signs of service to humanity, Aquarius and Pisces, where we carry our conscious ideas into the universality of our world work, our group consciousness, universal consciousness, and universal service. And until we've done that, we're not an initiate. Okay, so here is the summary of Capricorn, the goat. It's an earth sign. Quality, extreme characteristics of the worst and the best type. Ambition, crystallization, struggle overcome, transfiguration, initiate, consciousness, and eventually the unicorn of God. Negative traits, all signs have them. Too cautious, pessimistic, stubborn, self-centered, too detached. Positive traits, practical, ambition, prudence, discipline, and patience. Esoteric concepts, spiritual attainment, spiraling up to a wilder, to a wider field of awareness, transfiguration, where the head and the heart meet, and the soul finally controls the form. The polar opposite is Cancer, a water sign. Rulers, both exoteric and esoteric, Saturn. Key words from the angle of the form, let ambition rule and let the door stand wide. And from the angle of the soul, lost am I in light supernal, yet on that light I turn my back. The Aquarian labor is to clean the Augean stables. So, having lit his own lamp, Hercules is told now he must bring that light to others. 11 times the wheel has turned, and now you stand before another gate. For long you have pursued the light, which flickered uncertainly, then waxed to a steady beacon, and now shines like a blazing sun. Turn now your back upon the brightness. Reverse your steps. Go back to those for whom the light is but a transient point, and help them make it grow. Direct your steps to Augeas, whose kingdom must be cleansed of ancient evil. And so he goes in search of Augeas. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. So, his task, to clean the Augean stables. When Hercules gets there, he found that the stables hadn't been cleaned in years. The stench was horrendous. The pastures were, as they referred to it, so amply dunged that no crops could grow. In consequence, pestilence was sweeping the land, wreaking havoc with human lives. So as he sought out the king, he was met with distrust and disbelief. You say that you're going to do this mighty task without reward, the king declared suspiciously. I have no faith in those who make such boasts. The king thought Hercules was here to take his throne, but even then he was willing to let Hercules do the work. But the king wanted a bargain struck and said that if Hercules could do the task within a day, that the king would give him 1/10 of a cattle. If Hercules failed, his life and fortune belonged to the king. Hercules wandered through the blighted place, and he saw a cart go by that was piled high with dead, the victims of all the pestilence. He saw two rivers, the Alpheus and the Peneus, flowing nearby, and an idea flashed in his mind. By great exertion, he diverted both these streams so that they poured their waters through the dung-filled stables. The rushing torrents swept away the long accumulated filth, purging the fetid muck. And just like that, within a single day, the impossible task was performed. When Hercules returned to the king just scowled at him, claiming that Hercules had tricked the king and that the rivers did the work, not Hercules. The king refused to pay Hercules and banished him from the kingdom. Hercules was not doing it for pay. So he was happy. He went home. He had been successful. He completed his task. A server of the world you have become, his teacher told him. You have gone on by going back. You have come to the house of light by yet another path. You have spent your light on others so they might share it. The jewel that is the 11th labor is for yours evermore. And so he cleaned the Augean stables, an act of service. Having common sense, which real initiates always have, Hercules contemplated the problem first. Aries is an air sign. That's a mental sign. He thought about it. The filth represents the accumulated dross that man has created on mental, emotional, and physical levels. The two rivers were the water of life and the river of love, and they must both be released so that the condition in which people live is improved. But as we saw with the king, there was no appreciation for the work that Hercules did. People fear what they don't understand. Hercules broke down barriers by using the two rivers. Now, in our present time, for the first time, humanity is a coordinated personality. It's got a mind, emotional nature, and physical body that are functioning as one. And those are the symbolic stables that haven't been cleaned in years. Hercules broke down the barriers, and that's the first thing that has to happen in the Aquarian age. We're just now barely beginning to do that. We're barely beginning to think in broad terms, to quit being so exclusive. Emerging in the world are groups of men and women everywhere who are wrestling with themselves in order to become inclusive in their thought, in order to become world workers. Because in the Aquarian age, nations as we know them now are going to have to go. Nations fighting for themselves and for what they want. Nation against nation. Cultivation of patriotism is just a cultivation of hatred. We have to teach people that they are human beings with certain responsibilities to the entire human race. Breaking down barriers on a large scale has to be brought about by public opinion, and this is a very slow process, and it's largely emotional. We're now only emotional, watery, fluidic creatures, pretty much unillumined and struggling with separativeness. This is all part of that outgoing sixth ray Piscean energy. We're not yet able to be world conscious and in rapport with every phase of human thought. But we will get there someday, later on in the Aquarian age. cultivating the Aquarian spirit of leaving people free, cultivating the capacity of trusting people. We need to cut out distrust, believe in people, and they won't let you down. Cultivate the Aquarian spirit of non-separativeness, of love, of understanding, of intelligence, free from authority, drawing out the best of every human being we meet. Under the symbol of the bull, during the age of Taurus, man had to wrestle with the animal in himself. Then our sun passed into the age of Aries, the age of the ram, and we had sacrifice of the lamb, showing that the sacrifice of the animal nature was beginning, and it succeeded the concept of wrestling with that animal nature. Then the sun passed into the age of Pisces. The forces that played upon our planet at that time brought into consciousness of man his essential duality and the link between the two parts of himself, the two different fish linked by the band in Pisces. Christ came to us in Pisces to demonstrate to us perfectly what would be our ultimate achievement when we had linked those two fish together. The symbol of the second person, the fish avatar, and the fish swimming in matter, the symbol of the human being in incarnation. Having traced that wonderful, idealistic, evolutionary teaching down the last 5 to 6,000 years as a result of subjective forces playing upon humanity, we're now passing into that age of Aquarius where, through the symbolization of water and purification, we're going to learn how to be the soul and not the human being. At the end of the age of Aquarius, approximately 2,200 years ahead of us, can you picture what humanity is going to be like then? The animal nature, the emotion and nature and mentality is going to be secondary, and the soul is going to be primary. We shall have left behind the human kingdom, and though we may be inhabiting bodies, our consciousness will be focused in the fifth kingdom of nature, the spiritual kingdom, like it is now with Hercules. The opposite sign to Aquarius is Leo, the sign of the individual, the man who has found himself as a human being. He stood upon his own feet. He was the center of his little universe. Everything happened within himself. By that, he learned quite a few great lessons, and it was just possible, maybe, he learned he wasn't as important as he thought. So by subjecting himself to certain training, he found that larger self. And so he passed into Scorpio, where he was tested to see how much persistence he had. The outstanding characteristic of the aspirant is endurance. And the sign that calls for the utmost endurance is Scorpio. He triumphs like Hercules in Scorpio. And in Sagittarius, he becomes that one-pointed disciple who cannot turn back. And he goes on. And because he does, he climbs to the top of the mountain in Capricorn, and he undergoes that transfiguration. In Aquarius, the disciple becomes the serving master. He can be a master because he has learned to serve, and he can serve because he is a master. These two things go together hand in hand. Hercules, being the initiate, is pledged to do three things, which can be summed up as the outstanding characteristics of all true initiates. If they're not present in some measure, then the man is not an initiate. So what are those three things? Unselfish service. We're no longer interested in ourselves. With this new world perspective and universal consciousness, there is nothing for us to do but assimilate the troubles of our fellow men and help them. The second is group work. This is something that we all know very little about. The world is full of organizations and societies, and they happily train people, they're breeding grounds for ambitious people, but the average group is actually a hotbed of jealousies. It's people trying to impress the others or to get ahead. This isn't actually group work. Group work is standing alone spiritually with complete forgetfulness of our own self. We're focused on the section of humanity with whom we're associated and the work that we need to do for them. It negates all ambition. It negates upward progress in any larger organization, and it negates all assuming of official prerogatives. AAB suggests that these new groups will not have any officials, but they're going to work automatically because of the intuitional spiritual interplay between the minds of the people within the group, something we don't yet understand. And then the third thing is self-sacrifice. The true meaning of self-sacrifice is actually making the self holy. This deals with the self of the group and the self of the individual. And that's the work of the initiate, making the work holy. From the top of the mountain in Capricorn, Hercules has to come down literally into material filth and clean the Augean stables. Hercules had to aid in the cleansing of the world by right direction of forces of life. You appreciate that we're entering the Aquarian age where materialism as we know it is going to completely die. Eventually, what the Aquarian age will bring to us is the perception that all life is interpreted in terms of energy. We're dealing entirely with forces here. We shall be practical occultists. The occultist who lives and works in a world of forces and who begins with the forces that are within himself. Aquarius is depicted as a man holding an inverted vase, the water bearer. The man inverts the vase, and out of it comes two streams of water, the river of life and the river of love. Those two words, life and love, are the two words that embody the techniques of the Aquarian age. Not form, not mind, but life and love. And so, here's the summary of Aquarius. It's an air sign. The quality is the will to serve, first of the lower self and then the higher self. Increasing world service. Individual consciousness that's transmuted into that group consciousness. Negative traits, unpredictable, inconsistent, detached, stubborn. Positive traits, friendliness, humanitarianism, intelligent, inventive, independent. Esoteric concepts, distributing the energies of life and love, group awareness, group responsibility, universal consciousness, universal relationships, unselfish service. The polar opposite is Leo, the fire sign. Rulers, the exoteric ruler is Uranus. The esoteric ruler is Jupiter. Keywords, from the angle of form, let desire in form be the rule. And from the angle of the soul, water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. And so we move on to the Pisces labor, to capture the red cattle of Geron. From the sacred council chamber, the great presiding one revealed to the teacher the will of what must be. Will is a Ray 1 attribute. And Ray 1 is connected to Pisces through Pluto, its esoteric ruler. Lost he is, the presiding one tells the teacher, and found, dead yet vibrant with life. The server, Aquarius, becomes the savior, Pisces, and homeward turns. Notice how effective the words are here, conveying much more than just the outer meaning. All of DK's books are actually like this, which makes rereading them so rewarding, because the more we learn, the more we can pick up on these word clues that are just everywhere. The teacher called for Hercules and he gave him his instruction: proceed to that dark place called Eurythia, where great illusion is enthroned, where Geron, the monster of three heads, three bodies, and six hands, is lord and king. Unlawfully he holds a herd of dark red cattle. From Eurythia to our sacred city must you drive this herd. Beware of Eurythion, the shepherd, and his two-headed dog, Orthrus. One caution I can give, he added. Invoke the aid of Helios. And through the 12th gate, the Son of Man, who was now the Son of God, departed. Within a temple, Hercules made his offering to Helios, who's the god of fire in the sun. For 7 days he meditated, and then a favor was bestowed upon him. A golden chalice fell upon the ground before his feet. Within the safe protection of the golden chalice, he sailed across the tossing seas to Eurythia far away. It didn't take him long to find the grazing cattle, guarded by the shepherd Eurythion and the double-headed dog Orthrus. The dog attacked him when Hercules approached, but Hercules killed him with one blow. Then Eurythion, fearful of this brave warrior who stood before him, asked that his life be spared. Hercules conceded. Driving the cattle before him, he turned towards the sacred city. Not too far in this process, he saw this distant cloud of dust that was rapidly growing closer to him. Surmising that was going to be the monster Geron coming in mad pursuit, and so Hercules turned to face his foe, breathing fire and flame from all three of his heads at once. Geron hurled a spear at Hercules and almost hit his mark, but Hercules stepped aside agilely, evading it. Then Hercules let an arrow fly that seemed to burn the air as it was released, and it struck the monster squarely in the side, piercing all three bodies at once and killing the monster. Hercules returned to his task to herd the cattle toward the sacred city. He faced difficulty again and again as the cattle strayed, so Hercules would have to leave the herd and hunt them down. Across the Alps, he drove the cattle and into Italy. As he progressed on his way, he'd stop whenever he found injustice and deal with whatever evil it was that he found, righting the balances as he went along his way. At times, he lost his way, turned back, retraced his steps, and journeyed on. Though wearied by this most exacting labor, Hercules finally returned home, and his teacher awaited him there. Welcome, O Son of God, who is also a Son of Man. the jewel of immortality is yours. By these 12 labors, you have overcome the human and put on the divine. Home have you come, no more to leave. Upon the starry firmament, your name shall be inscribed, a symbol to the struggling sons of men of their immortal destiny. The human labors ended. Your cosmic tasks begin. And from out of the council chamber came a voice that said, "Well done, O Son of God." So, of course, we look at the meaning of the myth. He received his orders. Pisces is a sign of obedience to bring the cattle across the land and water to the sacred city. Here we see the power of words again. Land equals what? It equals matter. Water equals what? It equals emotions and desires. Hercules sailed to the island in a golden cup. And when he arrived there, he climbed to the top of a mountain and spent the night in prayer. He prepared via meditation, invoking his soul. Then he killed a monster, but he did not kill the shepherd. The symbolism of the red cattle is the lower desires, an outstanding characteristic of humanity. They're guarded by the shepherd, which is the mind, the two-headed dog representing the matter aspect, and the psychic natures. The mind can still be the shepherd of the cattle, but the two-headed dog, the psychic emotional nature, the matter aspect, had to be deprived of their power. The shepherd still had power, something a person in incarnation will need to develop the mind. It needs that interpreter of spiritual energy from the soul to do the work that the person has incarnated to do. Let's go off on a little side trip here. What exactly does it mean to be a savior? And how is Hercules a world savior? Well, he had a vision of something that he has to do. He sees humanity owned by a monster, the threefold personality united, but not yet controlled by the soul. This is progress. The union of those three lower vehicles and the emergence of the personality is progress. But still more progress is needed to flood the four of them with the light of the soul. We can see this best in the story of Jesus, the human being, who was in rapport with his soul, who, like Hercules, becomes a transmitter of light to the sons of men. Eventually, as we all follow their footsteps on the path, we can envision the concept of humanity as a whole, with all minds held steady in that light, transmitting to the lower kingdoms in nature that spiritual energy which will raise them up into heaven. That is the work of humanity. We're so occupied with our own problems that we forget the larger picture. Remember, the form aspect was killed, the unlawful keeper of the cattle. But the shepherd and the cattle were redeemed, and they were raised up in the golden cup. Here you have the Holy Grail, that most exalted symbol. And so the work was accomplished. The world savior had fulfilled his function. He had lifted up humanity. That is what all world saviors have done. They all did what, to a greater extent, the Christ did. The work is slow and plodding for world saviors, but time means nothing to them. The term world savior has until now been associated with the thought of the emergence of great sons of God out of the Father's home, called by the need of humanity to do a great work. Down the ages, they have come. They've dwelt in physical bodies, worked through an emotional nature, and have been exceedingly intelligent. They have, by their lives, set examples that we may follow in their steps. Their words have sounded the message that humanity needed in order to take the immediate next step forward for humanity at that time. In their acts, they have given a demonstration of service and gone about the world doing good. Their names have stayed with us down the ages, remembered for thousands of years. Alice Bailey speculates in her lecture that this labor has not yet been completed, that the accomplishment lies ahead, and that humanity, the human monster, is now ready for salvation and the real work of the world savior. This is the waning of the Piscean Age and the waxing of the Aquarian Age, and both of them are led by that same world teacher, the Christ. Okay, back on track. The sign Pisces marks a triangular place in the heavens. It's a symbol of reality. This sign rules the feet, and hence the idea of treading the path and attaining the goal underlying this spiritual revelation of the Piscean Age. Pisces is also the sign of death in its various aspects. Sometimes it's the death of the body, or it may be that of an old foolishness that has come to an end, an undesirable friendship, devotion to some religious form or thought that has held you and now it's not important to you anymore. It's the end of something that's going to set your feet upon a new path. It's the sign of death of the personality. If we see the reality through the personality veils, we can let it go. DK tells us that there are three signs of salvation in the zodiac. The first one is Leo, where the word goes out to the human being, work out your own salvation. The man determined to stand on his own legs, he becomes egocentric and assertive, all necessary to salvation, because only by trying out his own equipment is he going to arrive at the point where he gets that broader perspective. The second sign of salvation is Sagittarius, the sign of service and silence, where the assertive man, tired of talking himself and pushing himself forward, loses sight of himself in the goal, and he silently serves. And then we come to the third sign, Pisces, that of the world saviors. As we talk about before, this labor brings Hercules that most exalted symbol, the Holy Grail. Per Light of the Soul, the objective of human evolution is to bring the Christ force into full manifestation upon the physical plane through the lower vehicles, serving as the receiver and container of the life of God. Sounds like the Holy Grail to me. And so ends the labors of Hercules, who was tested over and over as his lower nature was refined, redeemed. His personality gave way to the soul, and he became a server and then a savior. He was finally told by his teacher that his human labors had ended. And what? His cosmic tasks now begin. Always upward, always inward, always the larger picture. And so, the summary of Pisces, the fish, it's a water sign. Quality is duality, fluidity endowed with instinctual consciousness, mediumistic, a polarized mind unawakened, intuition dormant, death of the personality and release of the soul from captivity. Christ, the world savior. The negative traits, escapism, idealism, oversensitivity, pessimism, laziness. Positive traits, imagination, kindness, compassion, intuition, and a sensitive nature. Esoteric concepts, lower psychic powers that are transmuted into higher spiritual faculties, mediumship to mediatorship, clairvoyance into spiritual perception, clairaudience into mental telepathy, death of all attachments and liberation of the soul for service. Virgo is an earth sign, the polar opposite, Virgo. Rulers, exoteric, are Neptune and Jupiter, and the esoteric is Pluto. Keywords from the angle of the form, go forth into matter, and from the angle of the soul, I leave my father's home, and turning back, I save. So, let me quickly recap why we study the Hercules myth. The progress of Hercules from the mental plane through the emotional plane and out into the physical plane manifestation describes the work done by every single person. The work is arduous, it's slow, it's carried forward under great difficulties, and it's often done in blind ignorance of the forces that are released and the results to be achieved. But step by step, the aspirant is led along the path of self-knowledge and development. His character and nature are tested until the qualities that characterize the form can be transmuted into those which reveal the soul. And so we saw the four preparatory signs, the four physical plane struggle signs, and now we've seen the four signs of achievement, going straight for the goal in Sagittarius, scaling the mountain of initiation in Capricorn, becoming the world server in Aquarius, and the world savior in Pisces. We saw the changes in Hercules as he proceeded along the path of probation and then discipleship. He sets out confident, little realizing the magnitude of his tasks. He was unprepared for failure, and he failed several times. He was not only impulsive, but he did fail. He had to redo some labors, or in several cases, he finished them very badly, causing deaths that were not intended. He is still susceptible to glamour and illusion, but he is solidly on the path of discipleship, set on performing those 12 acts of service for humanity. And he does. He completes them. So, remember, by combining the astrological and symbolical story, the tests of everyday life of a disciple are shown to us. They're vivid expressions of the signs where the myths take place. Each sign subjects all of us to the influences of certain forces, and it confers certain tendencies on us, whether we're an aspirant, a disciple, or an average person. And when we understand that, the meaning of the tests becomes clear. How the moon sign labor describes the lesson of our past patterns that encompass the prison of our soul. How the sun sign labor describes the challenges of our personality and what we're supposed to be working on this lifetime. How the ascendant sign labor points to the soul qualities that we are here to cultivate this lifetime, and its implications for all of us in our own spiritual journey. So this concludes our discussion of the labors of Hercules. I hope that you've enjoyed these webinars. And I want to tell you that although the remaining ones are optional viewing, We do have four other webinars in our Great Quest series that cover more on esoteric astrology and introduce you to esoteric psychology. So we hope that you will continue to watch them, one each month, as you finish up this year in Great Quest. Both subjects should be informative for you, and they should help you understand yourself, your friends, and your family better as you begin to recognize these behaviors, both the good ones and the bad ones, that point to the energies that make up our various vehicles of expression. You will, of course, have a more in-depth study of both of these subjects once you get into Quest Universal. So, thank you very much. And goodbye.